From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good evening. Welcome to the Thursday edition of The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
And I'm Travis Fain, WRAL State House Reporter.
It's kind of a busy day around here today. Not
busier than I expected.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you were all over different committee meetings all day long, I think.
Yep. Not only that, but the State Board of Elections, which is always a treat. But let's start by talking a little bit about guns, about the gun bill that we talked about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have heard us say yesterday, heard me say yesterday, that even with this push to change the way pistol permits are done, instead of going to the sheriff every time you want to buy a pistol and getting a new pistol permit, there'd be this five-year permit that's good for an unlimited number of purchases. You may have heard me say that there would be a federal background check every purchase in addition to that. That's incorrect.
Not true.
And it's incorrect. Senator Danny Britt said it incorrect in a committee yesterday. Senate staff said it incorrectly when I spoke to them, and then I repeated it. And that was my fault, and I'm sorry. You know who was right about this? Moms Demand Action. They were exactly right about this. Basically, this would be a five-year background check. The pistol permit is the background check. And so you go, you get this pistol permit, and then you go to the firearms dealer. They can run an additional background check
federal,
if they want to.
Right, a federal check.
But they don't have to.
Right, because you have that pistol purchase permit.
Yep. And so it's good for 5 years. There is, however, a database that, according to the Sheriff's Association, can automatically and daily take a list of permittees, people with pistol permits, and compare that against state databases that track crimes. And if it finds anything disqualifying, kick you out. The bill, as proposed, as written, as is moving forward, or we think is going to move forward, would require sheriffs to kick people out of that permit, get rid of their five-year permit if they commit a crime that is disqualifying. So does that all make sense? So there is this kind of cross-check.
Does it actually happen like that, though?
The plan is for it to happen like that. How it happens exactly right now, I don't know, because it's not as relevant under the current system, because you have to get a pistol permit every time.
Which the sheriff would do a background check and would see that something had come up.
That's correct. So just the kind of point here is that the pistol permit is the background check. There is not a second check if you go to buy a handgun and you have this pistol permit. They don't have to do another one.
They can, but they don't
at the
have
store.
To.
They can, but they don't have to. I talked to a couple of stores today, and I didn't get a real strong sense of whether or not it's common practice to do it anyway. So anyway, and you did a little more reporting on this bill, too.
I did. I was, you know, talking just basically to Senator Floyd McKissick has concerns about it. You know, one of the things that, you know, we should probably emphasize a little bit is that when you have to go in every time to get one of these permits, you know, as Senator McKissick explained, he's opposed to the bill, by the way. Those permits kind of slows your roll, right?
Yeah.
You can't go out and buy 20 handguns in a day, right? You can't, and then turn around and sell 19. You can't, you know. It says you can't, you know, you basically it just takes longer to get each permit. So it kind of deters people from building up a personal arsenal, as he put it. It also kind of flags the sheriff. If you've got somebody who's buying a lot of handguns and they have to get a permit every time, then it's, you know, it kind of lets the sheriff know, hey, this person seems to be acquiring
an unusual number of handguns.
So, you know, so those are a couple of reasons why the system should stay the way it is. But, you know, as we noted last night, there folks who are gun advocates have been trying to get rid of the pistol permit for years. And so, you know, this is probably the sort of thing that the sheriffs have said that they are willing to agree to as a way to streamline the process without getting rid of it completely.
And not only are the sheriffs willing to agree to it, they're actively pushing this
right.
bill. They've got a high priority attached to it. So we're going to talk more about it, I'm sure, next week, because
ad nauseam.
I think it comes back to committee next week.
In the meantime, a solar bill today
yep.
Ran into a little bit of trouble. There were suggestions by Senator Newton that he would consider making some changes to that bill. That's the solar panel recycling. After he would talk to industry and that they would come up with a new version of the bill, but they should just go ahead and vote it out of committee this morning. Well, that didn't go over well with Senator Bob Steinberg, who is somebody who has a lot of solar installations in his district. And he said, well, why can't we just leave it in committee for right now, bring back that PCS next week, look at it then, and vote it out? And he was told, no, we have to move the bill today. So Senator Norm Sanderson was chairing. He called the vote, called for the ayes. There were a couple. Called for the nays. There were quite a few. But he used his chairman's hearing, special hearing, to pronounce that the bill had passed, and that provoked some real anger from Steinberg.
This is probably a good place to note that the Senate literally has a rule that says you cannot record how everyone voted in committee. Can't be a show of hands, can't be an ayes and nays.
It's whatever the chairman wants.
It's got to be just a voice vote with nothing recorded.
Yeah, and that's a new rule as of this session.
We should also note that this is the second kind of bill on wind or solar that has said, you know, this, hey, we'll address it later. Please pass it.
We got to move it, got to move it, got to move it.
They did the same thing with the wind farm ban on Wednesday and on the Senate floor, saying we're going to move it in the House.
We'll fix it in the House.
And people seem to be saying, you know, because the session is heading toward a close. I mean, it talked to me in September about whether or not that ended up being true. I'm not betting for it. I know that much.
But we'll see.
Maybe they know something I don't.
I keep hearing rumors that they are getting close to a deal. But I think they, in that case, are the House and the Senate, not necessarily the governor.
Yeah, when the governor gets involved, I mean, anyway, we'll see.
We'll see, right? We could be wrong. They certainly do seem to be moving bills pretty rapidly. In fact, Senate's having a skeleton session tomorrow just for the purpose of moving bills in and out of committee. So obviously things are moving pretty quickly. So you never know. Maybe we'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, let me just run through a couple quick things. The CON bill, the partial repeal of certificate of need rules, that moved through Senate Finance today on to Senate rules. So that keeps rolling. The right to try expansion bill. This is the one that puts adult stem cells in the mix on right to try, and also extends right to try further by saying it's not just people with terminal illnesses, but people with chronic ones can avail themselves
That's
of more,
a big change.
More exploratory things. That moved without any opposition in committee. That was in, I did not write down the name of that committee, but it moved through.
And that's House Health.
Yeah. Probably. I can't remember. But it also, there's a 5% vehicle subscription tax. So I don't know. Have you ever heard of a vehicle subscription service?
Is that like a lease?
It's
Okay.
Kind of
like a lease. You sign up so you can basically have a car when you want one. Like car
share.
Yeah.
You want a truck? Bam. You want a Porsche? Bam. I mean, it sounds like it's very expensive.
They're going to tax that too.
The Department of Revenue didn't really know how to tax this. Is this a lease? Is it a short-term rental? Like when you go on vacation?
That's a big
rent. Car. So instead of it being 8% like a short-term rental or 3% like a long-term lease, they're going to kind of split the middle. They're going to call it a vehicle subscription service, and it's going to have a 5% sales tax added to it. That bill moved forward. It's Senate Bill 537 if you're reading
That's
along at home. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Walker Tillis and voting machines. Which one do you want to talk about
first? I'll talk about Walker Tillis first, because this is, you know, there had been some rumors flying around that Representative Mark Walker might be considering a primary challenge to incumbent Senator Tom Tillis in 2020. Representative Walker today telling Politico he is not planning to do that. So as of right now, Garland Tucker, I think, remains probably the highest profile challenger that Tillis is going to have in the primary. Of course, the year is young, and there's plenty of time for other folks to jump in that boat if they start to smell blood in the water.
Yeah, so. This was a will they, won't they, and it sounds like the president maybe got involved at some point. It sounds like there was a lot of conversation. Politico has had some good reporting, as did, I believe, The Hill earlier this week with some kind of insider conversations that went on that. Voting machines. So the State Board of Elections met today. We thought they were going to vote to certify new machines. Okay, there's three companies that want to sell machines to the counties.
Right.
All the counties, they have to buy them. It's not the state that buys them. All right. A bunch of these counties, something like 33, I think, need to buy new stuff because they have the DRE or some version of the touchscreen that the legislature said, no, I don't like that. We want something with a better paper record than what you've got. So you got to replace that basically by the end of the year. That goes back to like 2013.
I was about to say, they have been extending this deadline year after year for years.
And may, in fact, extend it again. The new state elections director has asked them to, Karen Brinson Bell, who's, you know, like a week and a half into the job at this point. Whether they'll act on that, I don't know. But basically, the state has to certify these machines so that there are more options for the counties to purchase from, because there's only one company right now that's certified. So we thought that was going to happen today, but it didn't. They're going to revisit it in another week or two. First, they're asking all these companies to submit information about their ownership. They want to know the name of everybody who owns 5% or more of the company, any of its subsidiaries, or its parent companies.
That seems fair at this point, given what we know. You know, yeah.
I mean, the concern is foreign ownership. Sure. There are no real suspicions. But in Maryland, Maryland got a call from the FBI last year and said, hey, did you know that a Russian oligarch purchased through another company your main vendor for election infrastructure?
Well, it seems problematic.
Yeah, so they found it problematic in Maryland. So that has spurred this. And obviously, with what happened in Durham, with some potential attempted hacking and just election security concerns in general, they have slowed their role on that. So
that seems prudent, actually. So we should mention a fabulous story by our colleague Tyler Dukes on the at NC Capital. It asks a lot of questions about why it is that our questions so far are not being answered about what it is that Wake County offered Apple.
Not Wake County, Wake County and the state.
And the state, yeah. Right. So, you know, it's been 6 months since Apple said they were going elsewhere. And so we had requested the records, as we always do when those kind of economic developments fall through, to see whether, you know, what exactly the state was offering, what kind of incentives, what kind of blandishments, if you like. And so we have not gotten any of those records because they keep saying that the project codename Bear is still active and Apple might change its mind and come back. Well, Apple has already announced its expansion plans for the last 3 years, so I'm kind of wondering exactly how they can prove that they're still active.
Yeah, and there is some intrigue here. You might remember Bruce Thompson, who is Apple's lobbyist or chief lobbyist or one of their lobbyists down here. He formed a company and purchased a whole bunch of land at the Research Triangle Park, I can't remember, maybe months ago.
Yeah.
Has been sitting on. In fact, I asked him about it this week. He didn't want to talk about it. Apple has not wanted to talk about this.
So Apple doesn't talk about anything.
There is some question of, are we still in the running for something with Apple? I think, because I sit next to Tyler, Tyler would argue, I feel comfortable saying that, that if we do get something from them, it is a different project. And you have to give us the documents from this previous project that we lost out on. So give us the documents. Give us the documents. Give them to us now, please.
I have a feeling this is going to end up in court. Not that we want it to end up in court, but apparently nothing else is working. So anyway, those are public documents, guys. That's your tax money. So you should know what happens to it. All right, but anyway, that is about it for today. Tomorrow is a day off for the legislators, so also for us, but we will be back probably on Monday with all the latest and what's developing next week on The Wrap.
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.